Science has evolved to a point where, like, you can actually build the best, you know, the best of the best moisturizer, face moisturizer, and not use any of those chemicals from the 50s. Not use any parabens, you know, not use silicones, not use, like, products that have been proven to, you know, I have to say, probably damage your health.
Yeah.
Although there's studies that prove that they actually have, but we cannot say it. Mm-hmm. And you can do that properly. Like, you know, it's like a new way of doing things, right? Mm-hmm. And these guys are stuck on the old way of doing things. Mm-hmm. So we're doing cosmetics, I think, the way they, we're manufacturing cosmetics the way they should be manufactured. Mm-hmm. And we're getting better results. Like, our customers are getting better results than these guys' customers are, right?
Wow.
So it's, that's what we want to change. We want to change the industry. We want it to be like, you know, the kind of the flag owners.
The pioneers.
There's a different way of doing this.
Uh-huh.
And since we started like 10 years ago with the multi-brand store and all that, we coined a term, so it's a hashtag toxic free. And now there's like 10 millions of,
really?
Yeah.
You did that?
We did that. We did that, yeah. Wow. And now you see it everywhere, right? And you see like Beauty Counter in the US or, you know, fresh.com. Mm-hmm. Everyone's clean. Everyone's blah, 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 right?
So are you
kind of started that.
Are you in retail as well?
Yes.
Yeah. In Sephora or
not
Douglas?
Yet. Not yet. Douglas, we're in Douglas. We're in Druni in Spain. We have one store, so one like personal like retail store from us, and we're expanding this year and beginning of next year into a few ones that I cannot tell you.
Okay. Yeah.
But yeah. So we're taking that.
London,
also.
New York.
Yeah,
flagship.
Yeah,
just prestige. Yeah. I know it's kind of like adds the perceived value to the brand, and then
and it's a profitable channel as well.
Oh, nice!
Like it's a good channel.
Very nice.
Yeah,
and also, I mean, you advertise and people see it online, and then people see it on the street, and people go and buy.
Right. It's got this cumulative effect of like, you know, multiple impacts from different places. It's a good way to build a brand.
Is like retail like a high priority for you, or you still like see more potential in D2C?
I think there's potential in both of them. It's more evenly distributed now, even from a channel perspective, even online. Like you've got people on Facebook, but you've got them on TikTok, YouTube, like people that go many places now. And one of those places is also obviously like on the street, brick and mortar malls and all that. So if I had to start a company today, I would probably put more effort in wholesale and like own stores than on the online side of things, probably.
Oh, really?
Probably. I think it might be from a cash flow perspective, it might be more interesting, more and safer and easier to close the feedback loop. As crazy as that sounds, right?
Wow.
If you had asked me like 5 years ago, I'd say that's crazy.
Yeah, wow.
But the numbers that we're getting from wholesale and retail, they're really good, even like from a CAC perspective, like acquiring customers on the street.
I see.
It's not as expensive as it used to be.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, you got to play many courts now, you know?
Interesting.
But it's good for the brand, I think, and it's good for the brand's mission to actually change the way cosmetics are, you know? It's to be present everywhere.
It's very, very fascinating what you're building. Like, what is the next kind of like the categories, any other categories you want to get in, or just want to focus on existing ones?
We're going to extend a little bit on the existing ones, but we think we have good products for almost every need or every problem that, you know, our customers need to solve. So we'll be iterating on existing products and completing with a few things here and there.
Amazon, you also selling?
Yes.
Yeah? Yes. Is Amazon a big click channel for you?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes. Yes.
Amazon, we notice for us, like it's, you know, when we push like a lot of, you know, Facebook, then Amazon is just by default, like you don't have to even like advertise.
Right.
So it's kind of like fees, because some people just will not buy anywhere else but Amazon.
Correct.
Because they trust it.
Yeah, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
What are the, like, how many countries are you selling in right now?
We're selling, I don't know, like all Europe, I don't know all the countries in the world, but let's just say that we're not selling in Africa yet. In Latin America, we're only selling in Mexico, Colombia, and another one, I can't remember. And then China, we're doing a few things there, but nothing big at the moment. Everywhere else, we sell.
Nice.
So that would be Oceania, the US, and, you know, all Europe, parts of Asia.
And again, everywhere you sell, you ship from here.
Yes, it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah, it's crazy. That'll change. Like eventually it'll change.
But in what sense?
Because I think that we're probably like 30% growth away from it being worth it to actually do it in that market. The problem is that, I mean, we could do it now, it would be a bit more profitable, if not quite a bit. But then the risk from an OPEX perspective to have that cost, that fixed cost and all that, is too much. Like, so we try to stay on variable costs at the beginning. And then if we need to be, you know, bring in a new infrastructure that has like a monthly cost and all that, regardless of what we sell, then we want to make sure that we, you know, we are above the break-even line for that to work, you know? So that's our approach. We just try to be very effective on that.
What is like when like right now, you mentioned if you were starting like a business today, you would look heavily into like wholesale.
I would do things very differently.
What do you do? Case study.
I'd have...
Men's skincare or men's hair products?
I wouldn't, like, well, so let's, so from a personal mission perspective, you know, if there's a calling, then I would look after that calling and then find, you know, like a profitable niche there. But I guess my example would be like on any niche, is what I would do. Like ideally you need to have like a very high margin, a gross margin, very high gross margin.
80-90%?
Yes.
Yeah.
80-90%.
Which means you're buying products
after return rates and everything, like 80-90%. That has to be like you want like zero, like our return rate is less than 1%.
Oh wow.
It's actually less than 1,000%. 1,000, you know, percent.
That is crazy.
It's like less than 1 in 1,000. It's like, and so that's not an issue, right?
Wow.
That's a you know, another problem that we don't have, right? I would certainly like look at problems that need to be solved, find the right product for that problem. Have a list of like 30, 50 products that actually do that.
Yeah.
I would test those offers.
How would you test them? Facebook?
Probably email signups through Facebook or through TikTok, depending on if it needs to be like more, of a,
kind of,
more like, of a viral product or like a proof of concept, like an MVP.
But like more like you would, you just put like simple landing pages, you would just test them, or you would put like comprehensive funnel, you would put a lot of work in, a lot of research.
Generally what we do is like we'll have a landing page engine, so we don't do individual landing pages. We have a landing page engine where we can throw in a product. Now with ChatGPT, we can throw in the copy.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. And then you can have it translated in all the languages that you want. And then it has the mechanisms to actually have like quantity discounts, upsells, downsells,
things
like that.
Oh, nice. So you have your own landing page builder?
Yeah.
Holy
Yeah, and we have a 100% score on page speed, you know?
That is cool. How much did it cost you to build? 100,000?
No, we built it in-house. I have a very good dev team. It was less than 2 weeks, like 10 days. Yeah. It's advantages of having, I mean, I worked for Microsoft for a long time, so I know my, you know, my devs and what can be built. So we did that. So I would do something like that.
And what checkout did you, okay, so you
No, we use Shopify as a
Shopify.
Checkout.
Shopify, oh, okay.
Back end is Shopify, and it's beautiful, and we love it, especially after the winter edition. Like, it was just crazy, like everything that they released and what they did. So we're very happy with that. We use Functions. Shopify functions. So it's code instead of a script editor to modify the card to have like do powerful things.
Like Shopify Plus, right?
Yeah. And
so it does like at the volume and even like the volume where you're going, that is fully enough to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, and as I think we mentioned this off camera, like before we used to be full stack. Our own thing, right? And sorry about touching the mic. We used to be full stack, our own thing. And what we found out is that the actual benefit from that was actually the front end, and that managing the back end was just a mess and very expensive and complicated.
Yeah.
So we decided to use something else for the back end. And you know, we had Stripe as the gateway and all that, and that came up to, I don't know, 2% of revenue. The fee. And by using Shopify Plus and having them as back end, like the fee is pretty much, it's very close to that. Like the end, you know, the end game bottom line fee. It's very similar to that, and that's you know, a full company that's maintaining that backend. It just made a lot of sense. It allows us to have less devs, more senior devs that can actually build like a landing page engine in 10 days. You know, multilingual, like the whole thing.
That is,
you know, so yeah, I would
do
that.
Is it like drag and drop or it's coded?
No, it's coded.
Custom coded.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No drag and drop. It's like you basically edit a form, and that spits out the landing page.
Wow, this is awesome. Yeah,
and then we translate it into other languages.
What do you use for tracking on Facebook?
We're using Hyros.
Hyros?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. How is it? Last Click and Scientific. Very happy.
Yeah, very happy.
Very happy.
Interesting.
Yeah. I know that
Triple Whale, NordVM.
Yeah, we just used Hyros.
I mean,
it's got its limitations and things. But
yeah.
But at the end of the day,
you didn't think about your own custom tracking solution like attribution?
No. Like,
it's not worth it?
No.
Huh?
No. No, I mean, you look at Hyros or Triple Whale, you look at their JavaScript and the things they do in their code. It's like crazy, man. It's like,
oh, really?
You know, they're looking for things just to make sure they can attribute. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of like edge cases where they'll catch who you are by looking at weird things that we don't know what they are. Like, we're not experts on that. Like, it's not worth it. But Hyros is good. And also, like, a trick is if you have multiple accounts on Facebook, then you can go to the Facebook, the ads reporting, not the ad manager. You know the ads reporting? And you can change the default attribution to one-day click. And it will be very close. Like, in our case, it's very close to Hyros.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So you can force one-click attribution on the report.
Tip.
Yeah.
Tip, guys. Use it.
Yeah. And then that will give you, you know, will deviate like 5%, -5%, -5% from Hyros.
Oh, really?
So that's your free Hyros if you want.
And is it kind of like matching, kind of like what Hyros says it's attributed?
Yeah. It's pretty similar.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. So all of these, in that case, I mean, all of these kind of like external tools are not even that necessary?
I think they are if you're multi-channel and then you have some sort of logic. You have a sense of like what steps are being followed and make some assumptions.
Yeah.
You can still keep it simple.
Typical customer path or something like that, right?
Like, we have a tendency to do that, like at Coconut. Like, we basically will say, okay, if we want to know everything, detailed, perfect, you know, it's going to cost this much, it's going to be this much work, but we can actually get a good picture that gives you a go, no go decision.
Yeah.
You know, by doing like maybe 30% of that. So they just do the 30% and stick to that and make, you know, smart decisions.
Yeah.
We'll be able to make decisions faster and iterate faster. And at the end of the day, like, the job of a CEO or any executive in a startup is to make decisions as fast as possible and, you know, make as few mistakes as possible. You still make, like, you know, out of 10 decisions, you'll f*** up like 7 times. But but if you do that every day, you know, it doesn't pile up to a lot of problems.
Yeah.
You know, the problems that you're solving, the mistakes you're making are kind of small.
Yeah.
Whereas if they pile up and kind of bloat, then you f*** up, then it's a big f*** up. Yeah.
How is, like, the images, right? Do you have, like, the studio, like that image, for example?
Yeah.
Over there on the wall?
Yeah.
Like, do you have, like, a studio here?
Yeah, or? I'll show it to you.
Yeah?
Like,
oh,
if
really?
You want. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and we have a great branding team that actually, you know, gets the right models, and then we do all the shootings.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, I'll show you upstairs. Upstairs we have a lot of posters like this. So this is the cafeteria. And as you can see, like, here we have, like, all the branded posters.
And I love it.
And all that. Let me see if I can find the light. See? Ta-da!
Hi.
So here we'll do, like, they're doing a product shot.
Right now because we're
shooting. Oh, it's fine. Yeah. I know how it is.
Yeah, and basically that's where the models will come, and then we'll have like funny things like this, like you'll see. I'm sure you've seen this in the ads, where you'll be in a bathroom that is not actually a bathroom. So we have like different tile.
Oh, interesting.
Just stick it, put the model in front.
That's creative solution.
You know, and yeah, here's like, it's kind of heavy, another one.
Oh, wow.
So it looks like you're somewhere else.
Very nice. You want to, like, let's say creative. Like, from day one, you're building from scratch in-house, or you're hiring an agency, learning from them, seeing what they do?
In-house.
No? In-house from day one?
Yeah.
Kind of, wow, interesting.
Creative, like,
harder path, but long-term, it's just like...
Well, and you learn more. Like, you learn more and faster, right? And going back to, like, the value of the company. Like, if the knowledge, the IP is in the company...
That's like, I mean, that just blew my mind, like...
They're two completely... game rules, right? Because in one, you have like all the flexibility, you can make revenue really fast, you don't need to care about the back end or retention.
Yeah.
You just can put something, you know, set something up really fast, make it grow, it blows, something else, it grows, it blows, and that's a lot of fun. I mean, that's the most fun you'll ever have, right? Turning that into like a real thing is a lot of work.
Yeah,
and I could not do it alone. Like, I'm lucky I have my co-founder, and that she's great at, you know, organizing, having like a long-term vision and all that, and building each team, knowing that, you know, I mean, it's like a longer, harder path.
Yeah.
But it really pays off at the end.
Okay, so 2019, you just started to get that momentum. First three quarters, you're making $1 million in sales. Fourth quarter, you're making another $3 million,
yeah.
Right? So you're finishing the year at $4 million.
And right? That's like 400% growth versus the
previous
year prior, yeah.
Wow, so that's massive. But then 2020 is where everything blows up,
yeah.
And you're making what, 30?
32, so 100%
growth. What was the profit, like profit margins? Like profitable?
Oh, it was good, Yeah? Oh, yeah. Very profitable. We actually, because we had done a small seed round when we were, you know, a younger company,
uh-huh.
We actually bought back that.
Oh wow!
With our EBITDA, no, it was great. Like it was great from all points of view,
mm-hmm.
Except that you know we were 15 people when we started that year. We ended up being 30 people. We're hiring people like with,
wow,
over Zoom with a mask. You know, like just like please come help us, because we can. You know, there's too much work.
Yeah.
And
was it stressful?
It was like. For me, like for some people in the company, it was very stressful,
uh-huh.
And some people actually like burned out and all that, and that was awful. Like to see that,
uh-huh.
that part, and we obviously helped them, and most of them are still here.
But you thrive under pressure.
But for me, it was a blast. Like,
give me more of that.
I haven't had so much fun in my life. Like I remember, like even on Facebook, it was like just. Triple the budget, like triple it again.
Wow.
Do the campaign, just go. And everything was working, man. Like,
wow.
Crazy. Like, we'd raise budgets by, like, from $1,000 a day to, like, $10,000 a day, and they would still work, you know?
That's crazy.
And then we'd burn, like, the creatives and create new creatives in COVID with no models, right? So we'd do, like, remixes of old videos. It was amazing. It was great. We fixed the supply chain part and the manufacturing part, like and the shipping part, like,
in 2020.
Really well in 2020, in record time, opened our first warehouse. Still managed to have like low picking costs, like as I said, like 30 cents,
uh-huh.
You know, per package and things like that. And that comes from that year where the learnings were in that space.
Mm-hmm.
And then
2021.
And then 2021, we tried. So. I guess we saw end of 2022, we saw that things were getting a bit complicated.
Oh, you mean 2020?
2020, uh-huh. Sorry. And then the beginning of 2021, it wasn't looking better.
Mm-hmm.
We were having problems with structure, hiring, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of things. And Sarah and I, we made a call and said, okay, we're downsizing. So basically now it's like, we don't care about revenue, we care about profit. So let's make sure that we keep our profit.
Interesting.
We keep our profit. And that we build the right structure. And so we thought that that would take like 6 months,
mm-hmm.
that would be our transition year.
Yeah.
And you know, we still made, I think, 24, 25, 26 million
mm-hmm.
that year, right? But we thought that would be our transition year, but the thing is that we didn't get it right at first.
Mm.
Like, this is my fourth CMO that is now downstairs. So I hired three before that I had to fire.
Oh, really?
And this one is great, like this is the winner,
uh-huh.
right? But it was
very, how much time would you give like CMO to kind of before you like decide it's not a good fit? How much time each one of them lasted?
I tried like 6 months.
6 months, yeah?
Yeah, like the reality is that at 3 months, you kind of know.
Yeah,
And then you just lie to yourself, right?
Yeah, exactly, that's what happens. Like trying to justify it maybe.
Especially if you've done it, because like you've been there, you know, it's hard, there's ups and downs.
Yes.
But generally speaking, like when you have a good candidate, they're good from the get-go. Like, just they get here, like it takes them weeks. They take ownership of the whole department, right? And so we have Marta. We hired her like about 6 months ago, which uh-huh. is amazing.
Here in Spain,
yes.
Or you had to bring her from the other.
No, like luckily, like in Spain, we have a few big corps that produce like
great talent.
Yeah. So she comes from Inditex. You know the Zara group.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So she was CMO there, right?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, we got a guy from, our wholesale guy comes from Puig. So Puig is one of the top worldwide players in perfumes and fragrances.
Wow.
And so that's for wholesale and all that.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, we have good people now.
Nice.
Like and we've learned how to hire. So uh-huh. now we do like, we have a proper HR. Department.
Mm-hmm.
We have a proper process. We do you know predictive index?
Predictive index, tell me.
Oh man, you need that. So we learned that from a partner, actually. Uh-huh. So kudos to Chris and Matas for this. So Predictive Index, it's a very short survey where there's like two steps. It will tell you how do you see yourself, and then you'll just click on things. How do you think others see you? You just click on things.
Is it something similar to personality tests, 16 personalities?
I think there's like 16 types. It kind of like puts you in the one, but it does more than that. So with that, like you'll know, like if you need a copycat, you'll see like the whole, right? So that's a copycat of Alex, right? So I need a mini-me for this, but I need a complement of me for everything I suck at, right? So then you'll see like the opposite, right?
Wow.
And then when you combine, it's actually really powerful. Because that's like the starting point. But then they will tell you like, to keep Alex happy, these things need to happen. So it doesn't focus on your, focus on your drawbacks.
Uh-huh.
It actually focuses on your strengths, how to get the best of you and make you happy. And then everything that you cannot do, then this is the kind of person you should hire to work along with Alex so that the whole thing gets done. And so you got like ventures, captains, you know, like different profiles and how they fit together. They give you like things like interview questions, one-one follow-up things, like how do I keep this guy happy? He's so different from me. I need to have a one-one with this person. He has to grow and develop, but I don't know. I really don't have that connection, right? So you have like, okay, this is what's valuable to this guy.
Ask about
family or ask about sports, or don't ask about family and don't ask about sports, you know? It gives you a guide on how that person operates at their nature without having to twist their arm and like, okay, you should be more like me, right?
Yeah.
That's what we do. Like,
as
founders, you're trying to have mini-me's everywhere, right? Which is like the worst thing, right? Because you only see your good side.
Yeah.
Right? Predictive Index, highly recommend it. So totally change our game for hiring. We make no mistakes anymore.
Wow.
Basically, we'll interview you right after, if you're like an exploratory interview, right after we'll send you the Predictive Index. You do that test, we'll see if it's a good match for the team, and then we'll proceed.
So Predictive Index is like softer, it's like you just Google Predictive Index?
Yeah, in the US it's called predictiveindex.com, and they take care of everything. Outside of the US, have like resellers and stuff.
Uh-huh.
It takes a bit of time for them to contact you. They're not as agile, but it still works.
Okay. So it's like kind of like they offer this as a service, basically. They help you to do it?
Yeah.
Or it's a service, software that you just log in and use?
Both things. You can use it like you use it yourself, which is what we would like to do. But in the case of Spain, we need to go through a partner.
Uh-huh.
But in the US, you can use it yourself. It would just like profile everyone.
Nice.
It's game changer. Like no hiring mistakes since then.
Wow. What do you think where the main, like you just hired the wrong kind of person for the wrong role?
I think it's like sometimes it's out of desperation, right? Like you're not getting there. You have more hands. You have more energy. Like you've reached like the max that you can output. You need help, and you just kind of go and hire someone that seems like, you know,
you convince yourself,
right? And that and the first mistake is like the mini me, right? That's always like, and then it's like the two or three mini me's, right? And then it's taking you like 50% of your time to actually manage, you know, those mini me's. Yeah. So at the end of the day, like you're half as productive as you were. You know, these guys are learning. That was a big change.
Like, wow.
For us, it was hiring an HR manager, listening to her.
At what point you hired the HR manager? 50 people? 30? 50?
About, 30 to 50.
Uh-huh.
Like when we saw that we grew from like 30 to 50 and that we were screwing up.
Uh-huh.
I said, okay, we need an HR. Actually, my co-founder said, you know, she's wiser than me, obviously.
Uh-huh.
And she said, we need an HR manager. I'm like, why? You know, they don't sell things, you know, we're not gonna sell more of it, you know. And she's like, no, we need it, we need to take care of it.
And that was also one of the game changers?
Absolutely.
Oh, really?
For us.
Uh-huh.
For us, it was a game changer, absolutely.
Oh, wow.
Total game changer. So structure was like, basically think of it like, we had a Fiat 500 that was, we drove it at like 220 kilometers per hour in 2020, right?
Yeah.
And we said, okay, this is not gonna last.
Uh-huh.
Like at this, like we need a stronger car,
right?
We need a Ferrari, right?
Yeah.
So let's build a Ferrari.
Uh-huh.
Now, while we don't have the Ferrari, we need to slow down
the
Fiat 500, otherwise we're gonna kill ourselves, right? Because you make a mistake at that level of growth and you kill the company.
Like, yeah.
You die by success, right? And so that's what we thought would take us like 6 months. It took us like a year, and we were almost there. We made some mistakes in hiring key people, and then last year was a bit shittier for everyone. So last year, that's when we really like had the structure in place.
So what's
and now it's like, you know, we're on a Ferrari. We're on first gear, maybe second gear. You know, we still have like probably like 8 years to go. You know.
And you said this is already like, I mean, you got offers like for 9 figures basically.
Yes.
For 9 figures.
Yes.
Wow, and there's just so much more beyond that. That.
Well. Yeah, there's so, I guess there's two viewpoints. One is like generally founders when they sell they never regret to have sold, because, you know, if you exit and you make like 50 million or you make 200 million,
yeah,
it doesn't really make a difference to your life, you know?
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Like, it doesn't, like, anything above 100K a year, you know, it's just...
Some extra small, like diminishing returns, basically.
Yeah, it's like, it's stuff you want to try, but don't want to hold on to. You might buy a nice car, buy a nice house, and then, you know, look at the ceiling and say, okay, now what? Like, a bigger house, a bigger... like, you know, and we're European, so we're a bit less ambitious on that end.
Or, yeah, you know. In Miami, there is always, like, the guy with a bigger house, you know?
I remember when I lived in the U.S., I wanted to buy a Jaguar, and I went to the dealership, and it's like a story I always tell, right? And I had just moved there, and I just wanted to buy, a second-hand, like, a previously used Jaguar, and... My commute was like 5 minutes to Microsoft, like from my home. You know, just a car to drive to work and back. Like, I didn't need to make any statements, and the guy was like upselling me on, you know, like blah blah.
Ego,
and then you'll pay in 100 years, but you only pay like 200 a month. You know, like all those taxes and stuff. And I'm like, dude, like, you know, for this money, like, I just want that car for this money because. You know, for that money, I'm going to take my wife to Hawaii to a nice trip.
Yeah.
And this guy says, dude, you're in America now. Now you buy the Jaguar and you take your wife to Hawaii.
America, like.
And I said, that's...
Consumption.
That's how they do it. And they're amazing. I love the U.S. I live there.
Yeah,
so long.
I think,
so many different...
I think a lot of things like, and I have seen it, like, I don't know, maybe there's a correlation, but a lot of these companies that are successful like yours, you know, talk to other founders, there's something about like United States kind of like sinking, like bigger sinking.
Oh,
you know what I mean? So there's something about it that if replicated like you did, you know, like with European kind of like in this context, it becomes very successful. Obviously, you know, there's like many moving parts to it, but kind of I think there's something to the high, you know, very like, you know, big sinking.
Their spirit is great. And their ability to dream big and get things done. Yeah. And that. Is amazing, and their lack of fear on some things.
You know,
like they're just like crash hard, and then stand up again. Like we're a bit more conservative here, but both my co-founder and myself, we both lived in the U.S. at some point.
Oh, interesting.
At young ages, like I was in the U.S. when I was 16 for a year in high school. I graduated from high school there. She was a professional ballerina.
Oh wow!
You know, like an athlete. You know, like an athlete, but you know, proper thing. Ballerina, and she was at it's called like Berklee School of Music.
Oh wow!
And she thought she was going to learn like choreography and things like that there.
Uh-huh.
And they actually teach you business, you know, like you go to art school, they teach you business, how to make money with your art, you know.
Oh, interesting.
Americans are so amazing. America is so great in that, you know. It's like you love something, you got to make a living with it. That's your right.
Yeah.
You got to go for it, right?
Uh-huh.
Whereas in Europe, like we're a bit more. You know,
I see,
easily scared or conservative, you know, like, okay, let's not take risks. So we picked that up from the States for sure, both of us, and the you know, dreaming big.
Yeah, so. Very cool. So, okay, 2021, you kind of downscaled a little bit.
We kept it. We basically kept that run rate. And now we're growing about like 20% month over month.
Oh, interesting. So 2022 also was kind of like a maintained.
It was very rocky. It kind of maintained. You know, we went up in Europe, down in the US, and I think we did the same in Spain, if not grew a little bit. So overall, it kind of like balanced out. Another year to be happy because kind of like when you go down in regions that you had semi-conquered and were really hard to conquer, you know, it's tough. It is what it is. And this year is looking good, like especially like we're still focusing on profit and structure.
Yeah.
and grow slowly. We're mm-hmm. growing now, I think, well, mm-hmm. but we have to stop the growth. We'll stop it. Mm-hmm. So it's still about like that foundation. So what we thought was going to take us like 6 months oh. might end up taking us like 3 years.
Oh, wow.
The hangover from the 100% growth and 400% growth of the year prior, right? And we're fine with that. We're fine with that.
Would you still have done it? Like kind of this fast way, like just scaling and then like break it and figure it out again.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Because you know what that proves is that with the right conditions, uh-huh. you can do it again.
Huh. You can do it. But even better.
At times 4, at times 8, at times 20, you can do it.
Uh huh.
But you need the right conditions, and so our job now is to make sure that those conditions that we're ready for those conditions, and that we can create those conditions internally mm-hmm. to make that leap again.
Mm-hmm.
So
interesting. In terms of like different markets, so do you have like, let's say in Europe, like certain markets that like you believe in, like very kind of like have a lot of potential?
I believe in all of them. Like seriously, like here's a tip.
Uh-huh.
Here's one thing that we do that is very useful to know if a market is ready uh-huh. or not, and how because like market is about like product market fit, right? And we think that market is like, you know, Facebook. You know? Whereas market is actually the people that live in that market mm-hmm. and that are on Facebook, for example, Google, TikTok, whatever, right? So we look at, this is a very good tip you're getting for free, man. We look at the conversion rate uh-huh. per country for non-bouncing traffic. Very important.
Non-bouncing
traffic.
Non-bouncing.
You go into analytics. You go into the segment that says non-bouncing traffic. There's one.
Uh-huh.
There's non-bouncing traffic. You do the breakdown. You can do like non-bouncing traffic for new users or uh-huh. returning users, whatever makes sense to you. And then you do the breakdown by country. You're gonna see that most countries, in our case, uh-huh. our conversion rate is around like 15% for non-bouncing traffic. So it uh-huh. excludes the people that are not interested or the traffic that you're sending uh-huh. to your site.
The people that actually stick
to your site.
Interesting. Okay? Uh-huh.
Okay? So that you'll see numbers that you know will be like 4 or 5 times or 10 times your conversion rate on Shopify because they're not bouncing.
Oh, okay? Wow. Because Shopify calculates everything, basically.
Exactly. And then so you look at analytics, you look at it this way.
Uh-huh.
And then anywhere you see that the conversion rate is lower, if you have the ability to do so, you lower prices or you increase discounts,
uh-huh.
and they will balance out. Basically, you're selling too expensive to that country. Any country that uh-huh. you see that is like 50% more than your baseline, uh-huh. your prices are too low, you can increase prices. That's a game changer.
Wow.
Believe me.
In that case, just okay, I just want to clarify, right? Let's say you're selling a product, like let's say this product.
Yeah.
So. Wouldn't that create a confusion? Let's say you're selling this product in one country for like 30 euros and another country for like 22 euros.
It might seem like it might create a confusion.
Uh-huh.
But if you look at all the cosmetic companies,
uh-huh.
at least the European ones,
uh-huh.
they have country pricing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because what you want to do is you want to keep your CM1 percentage. Your shipping's going to be longer, you know, higher, or the purchase power of that country will be lower, whatever.
It just whether kind of maybe that's...
It's kind of like the Big Mac index, you know, the Big Mac is not the same everywhere.
Uh-huh.
It's not the same price.
I see now. Yeah.
And that's the price that people are willing to pay for a Big Mac in that country. It might be half price, a third of the price, but otherwise, unless McDonald's sells it for that price, they're not going to sell shit in that country.
That just makes so much sense, because, yeah, it's like... We usually sell internationally as well, like different countries, but we're just like, same price, like just,
and that's
you know.
And that's fine. And, uh-huh. that's fine. I mean, that's totally fine.
Uh-huh.
That's totally fine and it works. But let's say that if you keep that going for a long time
mm-hmm.
for that product, you'll easily, fairly fast get insights because you'll need like, you know, 500 conversions per country.
Yeah.
You know, to actually be able to say, okay, this is this real?
Mm-hmm.
And then you know you'll see that maybe you can bring it up like you know, $5 here, bring it down $5 there.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna sell more in the country where you're actually lowering the price.
Yeah.
You might sell a bit less in the country where your price is higher.
Yeah.
You'll actually make more money.
Mm.
So it's all these things that don't make sense when you start, when you do like the simple formula, when you start fine tuning, it makes a huge difference.
When it's, so do you do a lot of pricing experiments basically? Or pricing kind of like
evaluating? We did them. Like, I think they're done. Like, we have the conclusions. They haven't changed. Like, we just kind of see the same behavior.
Is economic situation, like, let's say in Europe, does it, like, kind of, like, impact, okay, maybe we have to lower our prices, or, like, or you don't see that kind of, you wouldn't do that?
So one of the things that we look at every now and then, not as often as we should, is kind of, like, what are the, what does, like, the consumer trust index or whatever it's called, like how it is evolving. So today, like Germany is on a technical recession, not real recession, it's a technical recession because of the cost of energy. So it's just they still make money, they still grow, but power is so expensive that it's making everything, you know, like you're paying so much for your bill, like your electricity bill, it's not leaving you money for anything else. So it's a temporary problem that will go away. But that's why it's kind of like a technical recession. So what we've seen is that people are more prone to sales and things like that. Like Prime Day is crushing it, which is not usually the case. So you see that people actually have money, but they don't want to spend it. And then when a good occasion comes in, like, they're like, okay, now, you know, it's a good deal, so I'll buy. So I think there's more response to offers, to big offers.
Have you done that, like on your side? Like
we just did an experiment. It went okay-ish.
The Prime Day.
We did Prime Day now. We're doing great on Prime Day.
Nice, very nice.
On Amazon, but we're also like testing like new like flash sale formulas to actually you know kind of like meet the expectations from customers and from people. So that varies, you know. But yeah. Yeah, we do some price testing. We do some things like that. So basically, we're as I said, like we used to be two co-CEOs. Now my co-founder is like full-time CEO. Yeah. So I'm starting to look again, like have time not to have to like put out all the fires around me.
You have more
and actually
thinking
focus on you know the business model and things like that. So we're making some changes there.
Do you push subscription hard? Like, do you have subscription?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. We're not pushing it hard now.
Like that, you know, remember we chatted, like, you know, the, what is that, the club?
The club,
the membership? Like,
yes.
Is that doing well?
Yes.
Yeah?
Very well.
Nice.
Very well. We're working on version 2. And then once we have completed version 2, then we'll push it really, really hard.
Nice.
Yeah, now we start, like, gradually pushing it throughout the summer.
Because that will also take your valuation just like
That's crazy. Like that's a good chunk of our revenue that's automatic.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you, it's like auto ship or kind of how this works?
What do you mean?
Auto ship, like do you ship automatically to people or people have credit in the store and they can buy whatever
ship,
they want?
No, we ship automatically. So we kind of like made up this build a box kind of thing that it's not a build a box. It's kind of, it's a cross between a membership and a subscription. So you pay a flat rate every month and you get a free product.
Yeah.
And it's a high end product. So it's products that are like, you know, like this one, it's about $75 So you'll get it for like $30 or $40 depending on the country you're in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's a good deal.
And then so you'll sign up, we'll tell you which products we're going to be sending you every month. You can change them. And that's it. So you get a great value for a very low price. You get some like membership benefits where you get an extra discount on anything else you buy.
Nice.
And we get like you know repeat revenue at a lower margin.
Yeah.
But it's you know
it's consistent.
It's consistent. It actually you know the result is higher than than if we did otherwise.
So you mentioned like 80-90% margins, right? The product that you would recommend if any market like you would do, like it has to be there. So does it mean, let's say the product costs you to manufacture like $10 and you sell it for, let's say like $80, $90, $100?
I guess so, yes. Yeah. I haven't calculated the markup, to be honest with you. I always look at the margin, which is like a different formula. But after, so if it's $100.
What's your formula?
So it's let's say you want let's say between 90% and 80%. That would mean that COGS is between 10% and 20% of the transaction.
Yeah.
So let's say 15%. So it's your COGS divided by 85% will give you the asking price. And you need to add tax obviously, like in Europe.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And that would be like the recommended retail price.
Oh, interesting. So you you increase prices to the point to where like that extra...
Just keep them, yeah, yeah.
So the pretty basic extra...
Yeah, 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 yeah. Otherwise, like we've been very rigorous with that from the get-go. Like
basically,
if my chemists come up with a product that has a manufacturing price of 10, then we're going to have to sell it for this much. That's it.
Uh-huh. Like,
and then if marketing doesn't agree or someone doesn't agree or it's not within market price, then you need to make it cheaper. Not worse, but you need to find a cheaper way to make this product. Maybe the box, maybe something like where you need to... You know, slice out maybe 20 cents, you know, 30 cents without compromising the quality of the product.
Yeah.
And we usually manage to do that. Like, it's...
I love
it's,
that.
Yeah. It's, and this way, you're always playing the same game. And then there's obviously...
Because all of these companies, I mean, imagine all of the beauty companies, that's the margins they operate in. It's like, I think it's universal for all these, like L'Oreal.
For the
big ones, for sure. I mean, that's how they compete. Like,
L'Oreal will have like 90% gross margin after discounts.
Wow.
After discounts.
Wow. Because you can't, you know what I mean? You can't compete, like, if your economics are...
No, you can't. But, I mean, at the end of the day, like, our motto is still, like, to give you the best product.
Yeah.
And it's expensive, man. Like, it's not, no offense to anyone that, like, dropships from China, right? But that's, like, from a formulation perspective.
Yeah.
That's very questionable. Like even like from an ethical perspective, like the sourcing of the ingredients, they test it on animals. That's like, it's mandatory in China. So it's fine. Like you're making money. That's fine. Like, it's not your purpose to make like the most ethical blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But in our case it is, right? So,
it has to evolve though. You know, it's like, okay, you test it, you validate it, right? Like, you know what I mean? It's like at the beginning, your product might not be the best, but then, if you make money, it's, I think, just kind of like makes sense, not pulling the money out of business, but then improve the custom formulation, improve the packaging, improve the experience for customer, just makes so much sense.
Yeah. For us, we're really focusing on the actual solution, right?
So
if you have, let's say, eye bags or whatever, whatever's worrying you, right?
Uh-huh.
We want to make a product that will actually fix that and will be the best in the market in doing so, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we're so happy because we get awards afterwards, and
which
kind of like revalidates, like makes
very
us feel
nice.
Good, right? Like, okay, we really made a good product. Not only our customers are telling us, but the industry.
Is it hard to get those awards? Like,
yes.
Yeah, I can imagine.
There's some very easy awards to get.
Uh-huh.
Generally, the ones where like people vote and stuff like that, where someone will write a bot or whatever.
Is this one like a big deal? Beauty shortlist award?
This is like the best in the industry.
Holy shit!
This is like the Oscars of beauty.
No.
And the reason is that these are independent panels formed by industry experts. So, and
do they review your formula? Do they actually put it in a lab in like kind of like?
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do it. But the panelists are independent.
Uh-huh.
And in these awards, there's like brands like L'Oreal, like Shiseido and all that. So for an indie brand like ours to win like best, whatever this was, like best facial serum or something.
How do you keep the balance? Like, how do you like kind of, okay, do you segment? I'm very curious, like, let's say there's probably like a lot of pressure, maybe not at this point because you put the systems, you put people in place, but like, do you, let's say, come home, turn off your phone, cut it, okay, this is spam?
Oh, I wish, man.
No?
Like, I used to do that. I still do it.
Uh-huh.
It varies, like, I don't have like a secret sauce or anything like that. When I worked at Microsoft, which for me was more stressful in many ways, then yes, like 5 o'clock, I would clock out and no phone, nothing. I'd be with my kids, my wife, now ex-wife, and just family time, right? When you're an entrepreneur, it's kind of hard.
Like,
I think that it's just being... enjoying the ride, being realistic, which is really hard for all of us sometimes, and really knowing, like, from all the things you want to accomplish, like which ones are really important. Like in my case, is you know, the well-being of my kids. Mm-hmm. And I mean that from a family perspective, that I can spend quality time with them.
Yeah.
You know, that we can be not friends, but at least, you know, you can never be friends with your kids. But, you know, but have like a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
We can talk. They'll explain me things. I'll talk to them about my problems. I'll talk about their problems, you know, have dinner together, mm-hmm. Watch a movie or whatever. Like, you know, that's life.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Everything else is work. Work can be great, right?
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. you have two jobs.
Like, yeah.
You, and this is like you and your family, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. And your work. Mm-hmm. So when I had kids, like basically the way I explain it to everyone is like, now I have two jobs. It's like, mm-hmm. it's a part-time job. Mm-hmm. So if I put 8 hours here, I'm not going to be able to put 8 hours here.
Yeah.
Then something's not right, right? So I'll have to make up on the weekend. Maybe I can work off of my phone.
Yeah.
You know, from home with my kids. Maybe one day I'll have to do a, you know, an all-nighter working.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Uh-huh.
It's just balance.
You still do that?
Just, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but it's hard. Like I did two, like, not too long ago.
Uh-huh.
And then the other thing is I'm 50, man. So everything slows down. You know, your mojo. Yeah, you sleep better. You know, like...
You know, in the United States, there's this, like, big kind of... You know, the Brian Johnson, all of that thing that's going on. The guys who wants, like, de-aging.
Oh, yeah.
Braintree, he sold it for $800.
I have a product, man.
Oh, nice!
So this is like this was before the whole hype of NDA Plus, right? Or DNA NDA Plus is it called? So this is based on epigenetics, and it actually it slows down the aging of the cell, the chromosomes of the cells that make you age.
Oh,
this
nice!
Product. Yeah.
Oh, wow!
And we released this like 3 years ago. Before the whole hype started. So yeah, there's interesting things that you can do there. But yeah.
You
know of them, I don't know them, I know
you
them.
You told me that, and I was, do you use VSLs in your business?
Not yet. So I'm meeting some guys that I met at Carl's.
Peter Kell? Alex?
No, some younger guys. Like I always go for the younger guys.
You know Peter Kell?
Yes.
He's the best at it probably. Mind Wally?
Yes.
He works with Mindwally, like big company.
Yes.
Because you told me about that product, and I'm like, it fixes the things that's like the core reason.
I know. We're storytellers. Like that's like, you know, on that Ferrari, that part doesn't work, man. Like we need to learn.
Man.
And I'll tell you, like when we talk to our customers, like someone was giving me on the Accelerated Mastermind the other day, like. They're like, okay, so what do you do? I'm like, I explain. And I said, basically what happens is that people, you know, women, when they get to a certain age, they start to see the first signs of aging.
Yeah.
Right? And then they'll buy some cream somewhere, you know, some moisturizer somewhere. Start using it. And then after a couple of months, like they will not see any difference. Right? And then they'll go and look for like the more premium version of that. Mm-hmm. Right? And then they'll find us. Right? And then the feedback we'll get is like, dude, your stuff really works. Like, look what's done to my skin. And that's like a great story to tell in a VSL, an ad, anywhere.
Yeah.
And we don't do that.
Man, I'm like, gee.
So that's why I'm telling you, like, you know, we know what's coming.
Yeah.
But we had to fix the car.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise, you know, we don't want to go through the same thing again, where you grow a lot.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then your foundations are not stable.
Such a good point.
And it feels a bit cowardish, like not to like have the impulse to just go nuts.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, you see, like I mean, all of these companies, Warby Parker.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's also like the old internet, right? Where you would pay like 300 euros.
Yeah.
For a new customer.
Yeah.
And say you'll make it up in like 6 years.
Yeah.
And then.
With their grandkids, you know, they'll pay you like they'll
buy your. It's basically you're giving away glasses.
Yeah.
If you look at it from a business perspective, you're giving away glasses for free, basically.
I think that like the way you do it is perfect. It's like, you know.
Well, it's lower, so there's the risk of someone coming in and, you know, taking your space. So there's other drawbacks to that, but that's mm-hmm. the way we've chosen to do it.
Uh-huh.
And we think that if we still manage to build, you know, to create the best products,
mm-hmm.
then we'll be fine. If not, then we'll sell it, you know, for less, whatever.
Do you want to do like Sephora United States, or U.S. is not a priority for you as a market?
It'll be next year, I think.
Yeah.
It'll be like, we're growing in the U.S. again. I don't know to what extent we'll let it grow this year.
Uh-huh.
and but definitely
kind of like next year CPA game, right? Like that's
yeah, the, it's a CPA lifetime value game where like you know, like we still want to be profitable on first purchase. Like we don't want to go into that
nice
drama.
Yeah.
But we could, like, we could afford it. So we might, like, we don't know.
What percentage of your customers buy two times or more, basically?
About 50%.
50% of people come back and buy again.
Yeah.
Holy sh.
Yeah. So retention is great. Like, it's like right now we're growing on acquisition. Retention is still, you know, 70% of our revenue. So that's like free money that flows in.
Wow.
You know, like, we don't have to spend a dime. So it's good for, you know, to have for working capital, to have money, to make bigger decisions. Open like retail stores, things like that, right? So yeah, we're just like cleaning the house, making sure that it's very solid, that each section, you know, works on its own, and kind of like, I guess at the beginning you do a lot of things at once and kind of like you know, and now we just do one. Perfect. Uh-huh. Next one, perfect. Next one, or kind of perfect like... enough. Let's just say perfect enough. So it's it's more boring in a way. You know, it's not as much fun as when you.
I mean,
it's like
building you know, building a software. You know, it's like every feature takes time, right? If you want to do it right,
if you want to do it right,
it's similar kind of like sub process.
You have your components, right?
Yeah.
Like your software is made up of like five components.
Yeah.
Take like customer satisfaction, supply chain, manufacturing, marketing, you know, and product. And then you need to nail each one of them to actually have a good product. Otherwise you have like, you know, like puppies, when they grow, like they'll have like a longer leg and then they'll, you know, until they become adults, like you have that kind of company at the beginning, right? And now for us it's like very important to nail all of them. At least that's our bet. I don't know if it's wise or not. If there's faster ways to do this, but that's the way we're doing it.
How much does it cost to maintain the warehouse and your own fulfillment? Like, kind of.
Very little. Like in terms of like.
How many people you have working in warehouse? 20, 10?
10, I think. 10. Oh, actually, I didn't mention. So we have two warehouses.
Oh, two warehouses.
So one is. Our warehouse, ours, and we actually have another one that is outsourced.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yes. So I forgot to mention. That. And that's what we did in 2020. That's how we grew.
Ah. Okay.
So we got our own warehouse and already like got like a flexible one where we can grow if we go over this volume.
Yeah.
So we got 10 guys. The throughput is, I mean, we have our own like picking systems with scanners and stuff. We don't go with papers and. It's you know, the products are so small as well. It's easy to pick. So, yeah. But not like the cost, overall cost will be like less than 10K a month.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. You're in, you know, we're outside of Barcelona in, you know, a warehouse in the middle of nowhere. You know, it's not expensive.
Wow. 10K in Miami, it's like.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's the thing. Like, if your picking and packing is, let's say, like $3 or $4, then your shipping is like $6. That's $10, right? And you know, if I can ship to the U.S. for like about $10, why would I do that, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it has to, like, the difference has to be huge.
Yeah.
And so by doing these things in-house, it's a pain in the ass, believe me. And it needs, like, structure and all that. But, you know, it's costing us like 30 cents to pick and pack.
Wow. How do you
our average shipping cost, like worldwide, I'll give you this number, like worldwide is like $4. And that's obviously Spain is a big chunk of our market and it's a lot cheaper than $4.
Holy.
But yeah, you can get, you know, you can do things like that because you have like one or two providers. So they cut you a good price.
Is that like what kind of service is that? How long is shipping time?
You don't want to know.
Too long or too fast?
2 day shipping. Yeah, that's a blended, right? Obviously, the States is a lot more expensive than $4, right? Or Australia is more expensive than the States, right?
Wow.
But when you blend it, it comes to that.
Is Australia still profitable with shipping with everything?
Yeah.
Wow. How's Australia as a market?
Good.
I love Australia, too.
Yeah, good.
Now it's winter for them. Is there like a seasonality kind of like with...
No, there's we peak in February, more or less. We'll peak in like July, which is about now. August, people go on vacation. Most, like, our market is still Europe. Most Europeans will be on vacation, like, sometime in July, but mostly in August.
Yeah.
So it'll go down. Mm-hmm. They basically, like, buy their stuff, like, in advance in July.
Yeah.
And that goes up. It makes up for August, and then it just picks up. Mm-hmm. September, you know, then Halloween, October.
Oh, yeah, Q4.
You know, Q4, yeah. They will do Christmas. And sometimes we'll keep that momentum going until, like, February. And then come Easter, like, it will go down a little bit, and then pick up again, you know, for July. The and that's mostly, like, I don't know what the curve looks like in Australia. I haven't checked. It's not that big of a market yet for us. But yeah, that's pretty much how it goes. I think that's true for a lot of e-commerce.
Do you do a lot of influencers? Kind of like product seeding and stuff like that?
We do, like, a lot of UGC. We do some influencers, some macro influencers. In our case, we believe a lot in, like, UGC-like content. Influencers and macros and all that, it's hard to
measure the performance.
I mean, you can measure it like brute force kind of thing, like, you know. But it's hard to scale, like, to be honest. At least from our experience. In our experience, it's been hard to scale. Like, ambassadors and things like that, it's easier.
Yeah.
You know, like, more like micro influencers, things like that. And we've done that in the past. But at the end of the day, like, if you can just put money, like, in, you know, Facebook or TikTok or Google, whatever, it's like SEO, right?
Yeah.
SEO is great. And I see these case studies, like, you know, they're getting 10,000 more visits. It's like, okay, you know, that's like $3,000 of, you know, if I can make a 2 or 3x return.
Yeah.
That's great, man. Like,
you want to put the money where it gives you money back.
Yeah, it's just quick, you know?
Yeah. Do you use YouTube influencers?
No. We should. It's like on the to-do list.
That's like, ooh. Because that can blow you up.
Yeah, absolutely.
That can blow. Because the benefit of that is that it adds up over time. The video remains on the platform.
Exactly.
Then it's like 100 views a month, 1,000 views a month. And then it's like awareness top of the funnel.
Yeah.
In 1 year, you'd have, like,
yeah, that's. I was talking to someone the other day, actually, on that, and he was giving me numbers. I'm like, oh my god,
yeah,
I need to do this, you know, sooner than I thought I.
Yeah,
I should.
There is a guy on, I forgot his name on Twitter. He's what's his name? They sell these, like, earphones or headphones. Those are scaled to like 8 or 9 figures. Most, like, YouTube influencers. He probably would be probably one of the best people to talk about this.
Oh.
Or Rich, Sean Frank, Rich Wallets.
Okay.
They're like destroying it, like, on YouTube. Like, they sponsor anyone like a man, you know. So they sell these, like, watches. The wallets.
Yeah.
And so they sponsor man. They kind of plug it into the video, and it's like, yeah. And so you look at their. It's impressive. You look at, like, similar web, and you know, it's kind of like off. But then you look at the traffic just coming from YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, because build up over time. They've been doing this for, like, a few years now.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it is, like, in Europe, in terms of probably it's less kind of like these influencers have been less kind of maybe I'm wrong, like, less abused in a way, you know, with all these, like, products, like. Yeah, wow.
No, definitely, like, any endorsing is so good, like, you know.
They make it in a way where it's like there's, like, a coupon code and you can actually measure it.
Yeah.
Which is great, you know?
Yeah, so we have an ambassador program that works kind of like that, but we haven't taken it, like, to the next level yet.
There's so many things. And you're like, you know, but it's awesome that you kind of, how do you keep your priorities? How do you, like, how do you prioritize what to focus on?
I try to keep, basically, I have like a few post-its on my wall of, like, the things that will actually move the needle of the business, like, high impact, regardless of the cost. Like, what is high impact for the business? And then I focus on those three, and then
another six you don't touch
until I nail them. And something else comes in, I'll remove one and put the other one, and then I'll try to do.
Is that your type of personality, or you just had to learn how to do it, how to prioritize?
I had to learn. Like when I was in my 20s, I would do everything, and I wouldn't care, like, you know, until you kind of, like, learn about Pareto's law.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, that applies to the things I'm doing, like 80% is a waste of time. And then, you know, having kids will do that to you. Like, it's, you have to, like, reduce your work hours and be more effective. And then you just get wiser with age, I guess. You know, it's like there's like think of it this way. Like, if you increase your, let's say, your new customers by 25%, you increase your average order value by 25%. Okay, it's not easy, but it might be easy, depending on but it's a crazy example, right?
Yeah.
And you increase your repeat rate. So meaning like how many people will repeat like in the first 30 days or 90 days.
Yeah.
By 25%, let's say 90 days.
Yeah.
In the course of 3 months, you you will have doubled your business, right? That's just pure math. It might be 30% instead of 25%. It's not easy to do, right?
But interesting.
But that's
they
that's,
compound the factor.
That's the math, right?
Uh-huh.
Like. So I try to keep it like very simple and focus on these things.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, this is an example. I'm not focusing on any of them now.
Uh-huh.
I'm more focusing on conversion rate at the moment.
Conversion rate is a big focus right now.
Yeah. For us, it is. Like, we've done a lot of work with Carl, actually, on that. He's been amazing.
Yeah.
And then we're taking, like, the next level by redesigning some things. And
you do advertorials, pre-sales, listicles?
We're just starting to do that. Also, we do like landing pages and PDPs, man. Like that's what we've done. Because our focus has been, my focus at least, has been elsewhere, right? Like just fixing the car, you know?
Wow.
And now it's like, okay, now, so that's why like I'm so excited.
Yeah,
you know?
I can see clearly. So, wow.
It's like, dude, like we have a solid, you know, solid foundation.
Foundation, amazing, great products.
Yeah.
Infrastructure, people.
Yeah, we know, you know, we have the right partners here and there.
Yeah.
We have the right knowledge in-house. We've done it before.
Yeah.
Which is like the crazy part, right? We've done it before. So now it's like, it might be this year, it might be next year, but it, you know, it's coming.
100 a year.
Yeah, winter is coming, man. Yeah. Yeah. Right on, man.
I know you're a busy man. Thank you so much.
A pleasure
so many insights. I will personally rewatch this like interview because I mean the predictive index.
Look at conversion rate, non-bouncers.
The packaging, kind of like how you package it and how it's like, you know. I think it's amazing like how it's probably impacting retention as well.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah?
I think so. It's perceived value always helps.
Yeah.
The quality of the product is also made of the perceived value of the product.
So say like what, like $1 per packaging more or less, like more expensive?
It depends. Like some of them will be like $2-$3 more.
Oh wow.
So now you'll need to,
That will apply to higher price.
So now your product will need to be like twice as good, you know?
Uh-huh.
So it's, I think you can do it. It's more about like giving it some thought than actually spending more. You know?
Yeah.
Just give it some thought.
Yeah.
If you're selling cosmetics, like get some feedback from women, you know?
And you buying, and another thing definitely is just, you know, looking at buying some other companies' products, buy from your competition, buy from some kind of,
see
the experience, like unpack their products.
Yeah. I mean, go to Sephora and just look at what's new there, like what people are looking at.
Mm-hmm.
What they're valuing, go to Amazon, look at the reviews, what's selling, what's not selling, look at your price point. Reviews, not with ChatGPT, just copy all the reviews, put them in ChatGPT and say, just summarize this, you know.
Oh, wow, you do that.
1,000 reviews.
You do that?
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Summarize this and give me like the key benefits and what people are, blah, blah, blah. You just write your prompt.
Wow.
You know, and we'll tell you like, you know, people seem to value this. And you're like, oh. That might be important.
Yeah.
Let me go check, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's just like, now it's so easy, man. Like,
yeah.
I mean, ChatGPT is so crazy.
Mm.
We're looking at it from a content generation perspective, which is great.
Uh-huh.
It's absolutely a game changer.
Yeah.
But from a, like, you know, summarizing, like, big chunks of data.
Uh-huh.
Like, please, like, look at this, like, 200-page PDF, make sense of it, summarize it, 17 questions. Like, you know, I'm interested in this. Do you see anything like this that, you know, mentioned here? Yes. It's like speed reading, you know?
Yeah.
Like speed learning, it's crazy.
Yeah. how fast the technology, and you think about all of the advantages it can give you, whether you're starting out, I mean, you're already like very successful brand and you still, you know, taking advantage of it so you can grow in faster. Oh, yeah. People that are starting out, they can use it. Dude, you can use it. I can use it. Anyone can use it.
It just shortens the learning curve on so many things, like just the learning curve. And then actually the working hours as well, right? Yeah. But you can actually like brainstorm with ChatGPT. It's crazy.
My marketing manager, he's watching some YouTube video, and he's like, he said, I'm not watching YouTube videos anymore. He found some app. I forgot.
The one that takes the transcript from YouTube and then summarizes it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You're using it?
Like, use it on WhatsApp when you get a voice message. Uh-huh. There's a WhatsApp GPT agent.
Uh-huh.
What's that you can add as a contact?
Oh, really?
And then you right click on the voice message.
Yeah.
You forward it to this AI.
Uh-huh.
And it will first transcript and you say summarize. Boom. And summarize in one sentence. It's crazy. It's crazy. And that's like V1. You know, it's 3.5, 4.0, whatever.
Wow.
It's V1 of this thing, you know? And if you think of it, like, you know, old people like have no company, like don't have someone to talk to, and that will always be patient, like infinitely patient and kind.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll give them information, you know, get plane tickets. It's that's like another interview, brother.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, again, thank you very much.
Thank you, man.
I've learned a lot, guys. If you want to connect, like if people want to connect, maybe people would want to join your company, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe we'll include some information.
Yeah, just hit me up on Twitter. I'm not very active posting, but I read my DMs. So it's at Ignacy Faus. It's a bit complicated. He'll put it somewhere.
Yeah, I'll
here.
Put it. Yeah, he'll send it to me. All right. Thank you guys for watching.
Thanks
and
all.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
Hey, thank you for listening to my podcast. Now, if you're looking for help scaling your e-commerce business or advertising campaigns on Facebook and other platforms, then I want to invite you for a free strategy session. We help entrepreneurs scale from 6 figures to 7 figures and even to 8 figures with their e-commerce businesses. So if that's what you're looking for, then I want to invite you. There should be a link somewhere here so you can apply for a free strategy call and we'll see how we can help you out.